And we're back on AM 950. It's FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Well, over the past few weeks and months, we've certainly seen a rise, at least in the media, reporting on domestic terrorism cases. As according to the Associated Press, investigators have uncovered a plot to kidnap Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, who is a Republican, which is very similar to that failed plot to kidnap the Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer. This also comes just a few weeks after D Magazine reported that FBI agents in the Dallas field office are warning of the likelihood that far-right extremists will use the presidential election as a flashpoint to further sow anti-government sentiment through rhetoric and potential domestic violence. So joining us to talk more about this threat of domestic terrorism is Bill Johnston. He is a former U.S. attorney and federal prosecutor. He has practiced law for more than 30 years, including 14 in the U.S. attorney's office, where he helped prosecute multiple domestic terrorism cases. Bill also co-hosts the podcast called Justice Facts. Bill, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome.
So, is this threat we've been seeing of domestic terrorism new? Has we really been seeing a spike over the past few months and years, or has it been kind of the case where it's just been flying under the radar and now we're paying a lot more attention to it? What are your thoughts on that?
I think this sort of thing comes in cycles, and there are certain things you can look for to see in looking back on it, the rise and the fall of it, that typically go near an election time or an election result that doesn't suit certain people or philosophies or groups. And so you often see it in connection with a time like that. For instance, during the early part of President Clinton's administration, there was a rise in so-called militia groups, and that existed quite a bit during the 90s, and that sort of mentality is what may have led to the Oklahoma City bombing, which was so horrific, which was the largest flashpoint of that effort.
So how sophisticated are these schemes usually? For instance, if we're talking about these plots to kidnap different elected officials, are these large groups putting these things together, coordinating with each other who's going to do which task, or is it more the case of the, I don't like using this term, but it applies sometimes, like the lone wolf? Talk a little bit about that. How sophisticated do these schemes usually get?
Normally, they are somewhat harebrained, in other words, not that well thought out and not that sophisticated, typically, because you're dealing with a group of people who are already not overly intellectual, let's say, to be nice, because they often talk to people they shouldn't talk to. The scheme gets out, law enforcement learns about it and squelches it. So typically, it's not a genius effort by high-brained people. It's usually a bunch of knuckleheads that talk too much and then try to act on something. There are exceptions, and that's what everyone needs to look out for, which is there are exceptions for someone who really thinks through something, who does more than mere preparation, but actually takes steps to further it and gets people working with them. So there are occasions. The Oklahoma City bombing is one example where Timothy McVeigh had help in preparing the bomb, testing the bomb, and he carried it out, and it was unbelievably deadly. So typically, no, they're not well thought out, they're not well planned, and they don't even get executed. They get knocked off before they go anywhere. But there are some that succeed, and that's the one in 10,000 that we have to worry about.
So what sorts of counterintelligence measures do we usually take when we're investigating some of these more sophisticated plots?
There's so much online, so you often law enforcement can find or get a clue that something may be up because there's online talk or chatter. And after 9/11, the Joint Terrorism Task Forces were formed, and while most people think they were really for terrorism from overseas that came to the United States, they actually are available for any sort of work like this. So those Joint Terrorism Task Forces have informants, they have intelligence files, and they try to learn about things that may be brewing. And so those law enforcement groups, as well as local law enforcement that just have good ears on the ground, can hear that something might be up, because sometimes on the fringe of these plots, people who are less committed will talk about it and muse and worry about it. And that's what they often look for, is something on the edge of the plot that gives them an idea that it may be in the works.
So what sorts of signs do they look for when they're hearing about some of these threats? How do they discern what's a more credible threat versus something where it could just be a couple of people online just spewing something and getting something off their chest versus what actually is a real threat out there? What are some of those warning signs that they look for in terms of law enforcement?
I would say that most typically you look for action being taken as opposed to words, because everyone's entitled to their opinion, and even if the opinion goes a little far, it's not illegal just to talk about something. But when groups meet, so they often look for meetings, so organization where people are meeting, sometimes in an isolated location. Practicing with weapons is often an early step in these plots. Another thing they look for is a purchase of objects which could be used, for instance, in bombings. In bombings, you look for purchase of the raw materials, depending on the type of bomb they might make. And so sometimes you'll see suspicious items purchased. You'll see groups meeting for firearms practice. And I don't mean good folks out there sighting in their rifles. That's obviously, goes on all over the place. I'm talking about people that are meeting for the purpose of organizing and practicing something illegal. And so from time to time, they'll run across that. But those are the sorts of things, action rather than mere words.
Now, recently, we've, of course, seen many threats to sitting governors around the country, with them possibly being kidnapped by some of the right-wing extremist groups. But my question about this is that obviously it would be much tougher to, for instance, kidnap the president of the United States with all of the security that is usually around the president. But when we at least look at some of these state-level politicians, do they make a more enticing target to some of these extremist groups? Because they might be sitting there thinking, well, they don't have the Secret Service or some of the other security measures that would typically be around, like the president or vice president of the United States. So are these state-level politicians sometimes an easier target for some of these groups?
They probably are, because, as you said, they don't have the type of security that is afforded people at a different level. But usually you look for someone, whether it's state, local, or federal, typically the ire is turned towards someone that is particularly offensive to a group. Whether it's a stance on firearms or stance on some other issue. So any person, politician, public official, that takes a stand that might be extremely unpopular to one side or the other, that, in other words, you're looking for targeting. So they typically find themselves more in the spotlight in those positions. But the sad thing about that is, on both sides, it's good, it's, you know, nothing wrong with taking a position if it's well-founded and reasonable and logical. We don't want to discourage people from standing up for something. It's just that sometimes that does direct the spotlight toward them.
We're speaking with Bill Johnston. He is an attorney and former federal prosecutor that has worked in the U.S. Attorney's Office, including prosecuting a few, and multiple, I should say, domestic terrorism cases. So When you end up prosecuting some of these extremists, and you, of course, as I said, have experience doing so, is there any sort of moment when these people are being prosecuted where reality hits them? Like, oh my God, what did I really plan? Or is it sometimes the case where these guys are so committed to their cause where when they're getting prosecuted, they still very much hold the same beliefs where reality hasn't quite hit them? I'm not sure if I'm describing that maybe necessarily in the best way, but what are your thoughts on that? Like, when some of these guys are getting prosecuted, does reality kind of hit them where they think, oh my God, what did I actually do?
Right. Most of them end up pleading guilty. And so, just as in any case. And so, yes, I think most people who get in a little over their head in something like this regret it. And most of them wish they'd never talked about it, thought about it, or taken action in connection with it. There are the exceptions. Tim McVeigh is an exception. People that believe in something so strongly, they don't mind dying for it. That happens in this sort of thing. It happens in international terrorism, of course. We hear about it all the time. So, and that's the one you got to worry about. Typically, these groups fall short of even doing something because of this thing you're talking about. They get frightened and they get realizing there's consequences, so they don't even follow through with it. That's the vast majority of these so-called plots. That's the way they end. They fizzle out because people don't want to get in trouble. But unfortunately, again, there are the rare exception cases where someone is so committed to it that they'll go all the way, and they don't care. They don't care if they get caught. They don't care if they die. And that, like I said, we typically think about that in international terrorism, but it does exist in domestic terrorism as well.
So is there anything we should be doing different at either the federal or the state level to combat this threat of domestic terrorism? We've certainly been hearing reports about this the past few years, how we've definitely had a growing threat of domestic terrorism. So should we be doing anything different at the federal or state level?
I don't know. I think that we're really fortunate that if you think about what's happened the last few years, no major plot has been carried out or has been successful that I know of. And so I think probably they're doing a fairly good job. And a lot of that is just intelligence type work to try to squelch or snuff out these little efforts. And hopefully, you know, people will think better because law enforcement is out there thinking about that. But we just, you know, being vigilant, I think the next week or 2 weeks or so, we should be very vigilant in just thinking through if something looks strange or if someone talks a little too much about something extremist on either side that people may want to say something about it. But overall, we're fortunate. I mean, it's similar to international terrorism. We've been pretty fortunate. I think people have done a good job in paying attention and being concerned and reporting things.
We've been speaking with Bill Johnston. He is an attorney and former federal prosecutor who has experience working in the U.S. Attorney's Office helping prosecute multiple domestic terrorism cases. By the way, also the co-host of the podcast called Justice Facts, as we've been chatting about some of these domestic terror plots that have really been popping up over the past few weeks and months. Hey, Bill, really appreciate the time today talking through this topic.
Oh, you're welcome.